Frank Anano!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a Brennan.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go with another Brock and Salk podcast. Just the two of us today. All of our little family members skedaddled. So it's just you and me. Various, you know, things. Everything gets canceled now again. Like, we're back to everything getting canceled from COVID. But now it's because everyone's actually sick rather than just, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I took Avery. I was supposed to take her to a play on Saturday night. Got all the way down to the Paramount. Canceled. We were supposed to take the kids to the Masked Singer performance live thing this weekend. Also, I think at the Paramount, canceled.
Jeez.
Everyone just sick. It's crazy.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a little different tone when it's just you and I.
Yeah.
We don't have the cackles.
No.
We don't have the smart Alex. No. We don't have the peanut gallery. We don't have, you know, Howdy dropping some sound in every once in a while. It's a little different.
It's just
you and me.
It's kind of nice though. It's a little bit more, I'm not going to lie, it's a little relaxing without Howdy judging me and everything I say. Kyle's gotten, like, louder as he's gotten older. Have you noticed how much louder Kyle is now?
Louder, opinionated, feisty. You know, he's become a manager of people,
right,
Mike. And, you know, you remember that from your years of managing
people.
Trying
to forget it.
It's miserable.
Yes. It really
it's
is.
It's really difficult.
It's really a huge challenge. So, all right, so just the two of us, but we will, of course, get our opportunity here and start by talking some Julio. I called it a coronation. I heard it called a coming out party, by Carl Ravitch and others last night. I mean, it was just, look, I don't know whether people around the country felt the same way about it as we did. I don't know whether somebody who's watching that game in Minnesota or wherever is like, oh my God, Julio Rodriguez is the truth. But I do think that the other players, the best players in the game who are all there gathered together.
Yes.
They sure seem to sense it.
Yeah. I think the word that continues to come to mind, I said on your show that he's just so relatable to so many different people.
What does that mean?
Well, I think the other word that is synonymous with that, or maybe even is better when it comes to the reach he has. And this is rare. This is especially for young athletes. It's rare to say the guy is captivating. He just is captivating. He's intoxicating. You just need more. And this, I don't think, is just a Seattle thing. When you listened to the announcers, when you listened to peers, right? When you listen to texts that I got from friends that live across the country that are in sports and college football in particular, and they're kind of poking fun at me about the number of times I've tweeted about the Mariners and Julio. And then, you know, one of my buddies, producers, like, I get it. I mean, I see it now. Like, wow. I mean, he is just he's a captivating figure. He's big. He's got these beautiful, inviting eyes. He's got an incredible smile. He wanted to learn the language. That was important to him and his family to be educated and to know that, you know, that's going to make his reach even that much further. So yeah, Mike, I don't think it was just a Seattle thing. I don't think we're blowing it out of proportion. I think he was captivating. And as we tape this on the eve of the All-Star game, when he gets in and I'm sure he's going to be talked about again to that kind of extent, like, sheesh. I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of, like, going back to college where every year, you know, the incoming freshman class comes in, right? You come in as a freshman and it was Olin Krutz. You know, the rest of us were benching, like, I don't know, some underperformed. Like, wow, how is that guy a 4-star? He could barely bench 200 pounds and he's slow. And then all of a sudden Olin Krutz is bench pressing 400 pounds as a freshman. And you're just like, whoa, that dude is just, he's just different. And you knew it from day one. That guy is just, he's just built different. He's got a different wiring. He's so unbelievably explosive and strong. And I think now as we've watched Julio grow into his frame from just a couple of years ago, I think that's what was most mesmerizing and captivating is this guy is just, he's just different. I mean, he's just built. He made Pujols look kind of small. He made Soto look kind of small. Certainly the Mookie Betts and the Jose Ramirez's and the others were like, sheesh, who is this guy?
By the way, he did not make David Ortiz or Frank Thomas look small.
No.
No one's going to do that.
No.
Certainly not Big Frank.
Well, Nugenics. I mean, it's a big deal. Nugenics for...
You've heard me say this a million times. Frank Thomas is the largest non-football player I've ever seen.
Really? I don't think I've ever seen him in person.
Oh, my God, bro. This was years ago at Fenway Park. I mean, I saw him as a player when he was big, but it's like a year or two later, he was there as a member of the media, and so I walked into an elevator that he was already in. He took up the entire elevator.
Yes.
He is gigantic.
Yes.
Absolutely gigantic.
Did you hear him the other day, a couple weekends ago, where he ate the tuna fish sandwiches out of the vending machine there at Fox?
No.
Oh, yes.
Gross.
I don't know. Burkhart made some slight joke. Like, I wonder what's going to happen first. Frank Thomas is going to eat his third tuna fish sandwich out of the convenience machine, or someone's going to hit a third home run. And Thomas like, I'll have a third. It's fresh. It's good. And Ortiz is like, you're crazy. I mean, that's not a tuna fish sandwich out of a vending machine.
Disgusting.
You're nuts. So anywho, back to Julio. He's captivating. And last night, I think last night, not to be hyperbolic, but that's a game changer. That's a career changer. Not just that he made $750,000 more than he will for this entire season.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's
good
a plus.
On baseball for throwing some money at those guys. They deserve it.
Correct. But I don't, I just, much like, gosh, that guy's a weirdo, by the way, for the Mets. I know the last few years he's been odd in the home run derby, and it's been kind of fun. What's his name? I'm blanking on the first baseman.
Pete Alonso?
Yes. The polar bear or whatever they call him. The home run derby put him on the map. I mean, in a big time way to a national audience. And Julio, I mean, just demolished him. I mean, just made it look silly. And yeah, I think this is we knew it. We've known it for 90 games in Seattle. This felt like a national game changer last night.
Yeah, I don't know. That might be some hyperbole. I don't know whether it will be career changing for him or not. But I do want to follow up on some of the other things you mentioned there.
Okay, hold on 1 second, though. How many millions of fans across the country after last night will now into July, August, and September check the box score?
I don't know. I don't know how much that works in baseball. I just don't know.
Really?
I'm not saying they won't. I honestly mean I don't know.
Okay.
I think we, it was funny. I talked, remember Bram Weinstein, from Washington?
Bram Weinstein.
I know how
you
much
shall
you
not pass.
Right.
Yes.
I talked to him today to kind of hear a little bit about Soto. And while I was talking to him, I was like, hey, what'd you think of Julio last night? And he basically didn't know who he was. He was like, what?
Yeah.
Who? So, I mean, I know that it was really important for us here in Seattle and what we saw and sort of the validation. I don't know. I mean, I'll talk to my dad later. I'm kind of curious whether my dad saw one pitch.
He's a good barometer.
He's not. He's a good barometer of how, the most isolated group of baseball fans on the planet feel about stuff. But,
yeah.
I don't know whether it has that effect or not. I think it has an effect on him and that confidence gain from the acceptance, immediate acceptance he gets from the best in the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
and if he continues to do what he's done in May and June and through the rest of July, and he's rookie of the month, and he's rookie of the month, and
he's
rookie
of the month,
and this team is, in the playoff hunt and wins a wild card for the first time in 21 years, this last night or this home run derby and this all-star experience is icing on the popularity cake.
Yeah, I don't know whether it was his first big moment, right? I mean, there've obviously been some along the way, and I kind of went back to that home run he hit in Houston after the little dust up there as being like a kind of rise to the moment kind of a thing for him. He clearly has some of that.
Yes.
He's got some of that star power, and there's a few ways you can sense it, right? It's the charisma that you mentioned. It's the flair for the dramatic. I love the word that Joe Fan used in describing him. He called his performance the other night or last night legendary.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a really good word for it. Julio has sort of that Paul Bunyan legend kind of a thing about him.
Yep.
But in order to carry it forward, you got to win, right? I mean, you got to do that in October. That's when you really make legendary status. And I don't know whether yesterday in the home run derby will help him get there, but it is a cool step along the way. And sort of more recognition for everyone here in Seattle that we are watching something right now that is a gift. And, you know, you were asking, there's a lot of questions you can kind of ask about Julio. I know you asked kind of who the last, what did you say? Who was the, what does it feel like?
Yeah. Yeah. Last night's kind of coming out party for the nation and for everybody else was like whom?
I have I've been thinking about it since you asked, and I have a very specific answer to it. It feels like when, and I know that they haven't, and this wasn't a real game or anything, but it feels like when Russell was ascending in 2012. Whether it was the game Chicago against the Bears overtime. Or the game against the Patriots, you can kind of choose whatever moment. Heck, even if you want to talk about Russ in the preseason when he started running wild that year, right?
And we're Kansas City,
right? I mean, it had that kind of a feel. If you want to compare it, maybe Julio's inside the park home run in spring training was like Russ in the preseason.
Yep.
And this is just sort of another step along the way. It's that feeling of we're watching the beginning, the makings of a star.
Yeah, it was Mike Robb getting on the bus after the overtime win in Chicago, and it was Mike Robinson saying, "Yep, that's the man.
Yep,
that's the man." That he's gone from a young stud to just a grown man, and he's going to be the leader of this team. And Russell wanted it earlier, and Russell wanted more of the reins, and Russell talked to Warren Moon on the plane of, hey, can you talk to Pete and give me more? But nope, you've got to go and do it. You got to go earn it. And it was that day, that overtime drive, that earned the respect of some of the chiseled veterans on that team.
And Julio's done it as well. I mean,
correct.
And baseball's different from football. I don't want to make the same comp. It's really a Seattle comp more than a sport-to-sport comp. Because baseball's got so many, the way you handle your business, the way you respect all that sort of stuff that's unique to the way the game.
The way you grind and grind.
But he
and
does
grind.
All those things.
He does.
He unlike Russ, and I don't want to just make this a bash Russ thing, because you know how much I adored him at that time, but there was always this sort of discomfort with, God, is he genuine? Is this real? Right? And everyone always sensed that. We just didn't want to talk about it because everything he was doing on the field was so magical. And he does some really great things in the community, et cetera.
Yeah, Russ was never relatable.
Right.
Even from the very beginning, even to the biggest fanboys in town, which were you and I.
Yep.
He was never, when we sat down with him, it was just, there was never a relatable. It was, what was it, the Levi's?
It was the Levi's hat. And it's funny, you and Russ should have a lot in common. You guys should be, of all people, not that you have his speed, but you and Russ should have a lot in common, right? Your faith, your position you played, quarterback, right? I mean, like, there's a lot in just sort of on the surface that you guys should have had in common, and in some ways, deeper connection with the, the faith.
Yep. Yeah.
And you never felt that.
No. There was never a... Yeah, there was just never a comfort. There was never like a relatability. And I think if you chatted with teammates through the years, they respected the heck out of him, as do you and I. The community, all the outreach and what he's poured into and the millions and millions of dollars he's raised. I mean, that was all real and incredible. But as far as just being able to relate, he was more Griffey.
Yeah.
I mean, that was Griffey. Griffey was the same way. I mean, Griffey was hard, sometimes on the media. I mean, it was harder on the media than Russell was. Russell was just a robot. I mean, Griffey could be pretty dour.
Right.
And pretty moody. And teammates, I think, respected him, but I don't think they all connected with him because he was just kind of a different tier, a different talent, a second generation, the kid.
Yeah.
And
it's funny, Randy Johnson maybe is another example where I don't know whether his teammates always connected with him either.
No.
Right? But Julio, you're right. He does seem to have, you always talk about Macy, your middle daughter, having that gift of connection, right?
Yeah.
Julio seems to have some of that same emotional intelligence to go with everything else he brings to the table. An incredible skill set, God-given talent, just the way he's built, an incredible work ethic, a brain and smarts for the game, and then a natural charisma and relatability. Mm-hmm. It really is a total package. I still can't believe, I cannot believe, of all the dumb things Kevin Mather said in that rant, that was on tape, that he said Julio doesn't speak good English. He really, it's in there. Like, this kid doesn't speak much English. What?
Really?
The kid's English is so good.
Yes.
It's so impressive.
Correct.
How quickly he's not only learned to speak it, but the intricacies and the
And the willingness to do it too.
Yeah, yes. Of all the dumb things he said, that one always jumps out to me. It's like, God, what are you talking about? That's just not even true.
Yeah, this is kind of fun. There's a big old topic tree here with Julio, right? When there's about 15 different arms and limbs of this. Two that I want to tackle here, if you don't mind. Did you anticipate this? If we go back to March in some of the podcasts, kind of in spring training before the season, I think we talked about different players. And did you ever imagine that Julio would be this 3 months later?
I don't remember. It's sort of hard to say. I'm not sure. If Howdy was here, I'm sure he would have. Obviously, he predicted this. And
I predicted he'd have a better year than Kelnick because he sprayed the ball. Like he just had power. Oppo Taco and, you know, just power to all fields. And he was going to go through learning curves and adjustments and it'd be difficult as a rookie. But I can't remember anybody going into this year. I think there was a ton of excitement. Mm-hmm. There was even a question of whether he would make the team, right? Coming out of spring.
Not much of it. He laid that to rest pretty quickly.
He did. But there, he's still a 21-year-old guy and he's young and, you know, he hadn't had years and years of hardening and grinding in the minors. He had overstepped every level and answered the call at every single turn in the development, the progression, but it was still pretty expedited. Mm-hmm. Enough so that at the end of spring training, it was a big deal. It was filmed, in fact, Scott telling him, hey, you're coming with us, and I want you to be who you are, which is pretty awesome now. But I don't remember anybody saying, oh, this is going to be the American League Rookie of the Year. He's going to be the runner-up in the Home Run Derby. He's going to be the Rookie of the Month in May and in June, and he's going to be arguably the best rookie in all of baseball. Mm-hmm. I don't remember any of that kind of conversation heading into this year.
Well, and I think it's always kind of risky to bet on anything like that. So, sure. I mean, but my God, he sure is right now.
Yes,
and by the way, I don't know whether you saw this. Did you notice that Spencer Torkelson got sent down this week in Detroit?
Yep.
He's the number one overall pick. One of the other guys coming up with Julio and a few others. You know, this crop of young players, Brock, no one really wants to bet on them because of what they missed in their development, right? COVID and the lost year and the other kind of screwy year. No one wants to bet on this crop, and it's being used as an excuse for essentially all of them, right? Mm. Joe Adell and Spencer Torkelson and a couple of other guys. Jared Kelnick, absolutely, and others who missed some significant development time because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And
yet
that doesn't seem to be affecting Julio Rodriguez at all.
No. So the other arm of it
not even a little bit.
No, the other arm of it that is striking of the last 20 some years since really Griffey and A-Rod. I mean, that's the comp now. Mm-hmm. And the thing that he shares with both of those guys, Ichiro, I guess, but Ichiro was much older, much more accomplished and a much more refined product. So really, you know, the youth and the first round pick and everything else with an A-Rod and a Griffey, what he shares with those guys is there has never been a moment too big.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot say that over the last 20 years with so many of the different guys from the Justin Smokes and the Monteros, the guys that were traded, you know, the Ackleys and the guys that were drafted and, you know, just so many of those different players. And it was kind of the one challenge, you know, through a year and a half of Jared, like there were multiple opportunities. Okay, come on, you know, second and third or bases loaded or just come on, just come through. Right, here's your chance. Just build some of that confidence and build some of that, I can do this in the big moments. And it felt like, gosh, Jared had so many of those that he was thrown into pretty early. And yet every single moment with Julio, it feels like he delivers.
Mm-hmm.
And this home run derby was the same. And if he gets in a bat in the sixth inning with runners on base in the All-Star game as we tape this tonight, don't you feel like he's going to deliver? Like he just, it's 3-2, bases loaded in Texas. First two guys have struck out. Momentum has turned. Or is this losing streak or winning streak going to come to an end? Nope. I'm going to take a 3-2 fastball. Only the second one of that entire inning the reliever threw, and I'm going to bury it 420 feet to dead center field. And I'm going to put this game away, and I'm going to continue this winning streak just time and time again. For a 21-year-old, there has not been a moment too big. And that, too, is Russell Wilson-esque. That too is Russell Wilson from his rookie year.
Yep.
Right? Really from Chicago on, like, okay, there's no moment too big. Playoff game in Washington, not too big. Atlanta playoff game down 21, not too big.
Yeah, I think the Russ comps are pretty good. I mean, like, you know, and this idea that he's sort of taking over for Russ as the face of Seattle sports, et cetera, I believe a lot of that. And I think there's a really good comp in there. They don't have the same personality. They don't play the same sport, and they're not good for the same reasons. But I think that comp of the mentality of greatness, yes. Yes. I think there's a lot to be said there.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, this kid wants to be great, and he's delivering on it. And, you know,
there's one slight difference. I mean, he is 6'4".
Absolutely. He's got some physical gifts that Russ maybe doesn't, but Russ also brought speed and other things to the table and used the things that made him great. So the crazy thing about Julio is that we're not even close to having cracked the best of him. I mean, like, he hasn't even learned power yet. So, I mean, like, as that develops here over the next couple of years, look out, you know, just the ability to kind of get on a run and do it in bunches. I found myself thinking a little bit about his teammates and how interesting it must be for adult men who are older than him, more experienced than him, more grizzled than him to watch this happen. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that look like as, you know, rookies in baseball, you know, used to be seen and not heard. There's a lot of sort of rookie hazing and all that kind of stuff. And then you look over and it's like, oh, there's just a phenom.
Yep.
Right. I mean, like you watched it kind of reminded me of Showtime, or whatever they call it, ended up Winning Time, the Lakers thing. Did you end up watching that?
I watched parts of them. Yeah, I didn't watch them exclusively.
I loved it so much.
But did you really?
Oh, God. I mean, well, you know how much I love those teams and Magic and all of it. So it just, I loved it. But there's some really great stuff in there about Magic the rookie, right? With his big smile and his big dreams. And, you know, Norm Nixon and Kareem and all of these veterans are like, dude, whatever.
Right.
Like, they are all over him, no respect, whatever. And at some point, they realize just how good he is.
Yep.
Right? He's like, oh, my God, this is a different thing. Like, he's better than everybody else. He's Magic Johnson.
Yep.
And I don't know whether the veterans in baseball today are quite like the veterans in the NBA in 1980 or whatever it was. But I do think that element of, like, I don't care whether he's a rookie or whatever.
That's
like,
right.
This is what takes me to the promised land.
That's exactly right. I mean, this guy's just physically different. It's Walter Jones.
Mm.
Same thing. One of the greatest, you know, athletes ever in Seattle sports history. He'd be yet another comp of just so physically gifted.
So what was that like for you? Not that you were a veteran, Walter Jones showed up, but can you remember being a veteran or an older player in college or whatever when someone younger than you who was phenomenally talented showed up? And you're just like, man, I know we're supposed to give this guy a hard time and be hard on him because he's a rookie, or even try to mentor him because he's a rookie. But I feel like I need to go to him for advice because look at him. He's ridiculous.
Yeah that's interesting. I did not really have that from a QB perspective, right? It was always, Kitna, it was Matt, it was Trent, it was Peyton.
They had that with you.
Yeah, right. I walked in and they were like, goodness gracious.
Peyton, I'm sure, most of all.
Oh, yeah, he loved me from day one. And Tom Moore. I mean, there was just an instant gratification and just, camaraderie.
Great connection.
Yeah, totally. So I didn't necessarily have that. Damon would tell you it was that way with Tom Brady. I've told that story a bunch, right? Where it's like, oh my gosh, to the point he called me, like, I'm going to get cut. Like, this dude he's ridiculous. Like, he's that good and he has that much belief. Now, Tom wasn't a great athlete and couldn't run a lick or jump or, you know, have a super developed body or anything, but his mind and his arm were overwhelming, and his belief and his accuracy and his anticipation and all of it was, this dude is the real deal. And you saw, you know, even a Bledsoe eventually just kind of relent and go, yeah, I mean, this guy, it's supposed to be me. He's taking everything that is supposed to be mine. This is my contract. This is my town. I led this team to a Super Bowl before there was Tom Brady. And I think even in the end, I think even he would have to say, dude's pretty special.
Okay. So as good as he is, and as good as this team is playing right now, 14 straight. I mean, we're not even really talking about that element of it and the 14 straight. How did you answer this question, by the way? I forget what your answer was. What is the biggest reason for the Mariners streak? Is it the starting pitching, relief pitching, the offense coming around, or the team chemistry or whatever happened because of the
break? I answered it D. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, starting pitching is in pitching in general
only
is the reason.
Up 2.5 runs a game.
Yeah, I mean that's the baseball reason. Every one of those guys has found their place. The bullpen has settled in. It's just, I mean, that from a baseball perspective is absolutely 100% the answer.
Their bullpen is so yes. nasty right yes. now. Just everybody throws 97 to 102 yes. with a vicious slider.
Correct. Correct. No fun. No thanks. So that's the genuine answer.
Yeah.
But I just tend to look at these things and say, okay, even with that pitching that good, they've won 14 in a row because they believe it, because they believe they're going to get it done, because they just believe they're going to find a way. It doesn't matter if they're down 4 runs or of course they're going to come back.
And, it's confidence.
Yeah. Yep. And was that the brawl? Was that just winning without guys? Is that just everybody that's come up has found a way to contribute? I think it's all of those things. Mm-hmm. So it's just I think it is a sense of belief when you get on this kind of heater that they've been on. But from a pure baseball standpoint, no, it is their pitching, and it has been at the very top. Robbie Ray turned this thing. And when he turned, this season turned and this team turned because the ace put the rest of the dominoes behind him. The rest of the guys followed. And if he can turn it and he can find it and he can get into that kind of role and rhythm, then you know what? Logan and George and Marco and Flexen and everybody in the bullpen fall in line, and they certainly have.
Who's got the best slider on this team? Right?
Yeah.
Who's got the best slider?
I mean, I'm going to say Sewald because he does not have 98.
He's got 94. It's not nothing.
No, but it's not 102,
right.
Nor 100, nor 97, nor the yep. funky delivery, and the fact that they still can't hit that. It'd be interesting to see a study, and they have it all, of spin rate and mm-hmm. depth, and how much, you know, when you get a certain angle of Sewald, you begin to go, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now
when
now
you get this straight overhead, like, oh my yeah. God, how does anyone hit that?
Correct.
Because you watch him from sort of the offset angle, and it's like, yeah, he's fine. I don't see why yep. they keep missing. And then, I see.
Now
that ball
see.
Goes clear across the plate.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
What? Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's Sewald. Robbie Ray would be the other one. But
and Munoz.
Castillo? Right? I mean, like, that's what makes Diego
Penn
Castillo
Murphy.
Great. Penn Murphy's ridiculous.
Yes.
Matt Festa's got a filthy slider.
Yeah.
I mean, it's incredible how every one of these guys is dominating with that pitch. It just seems to have kind of overtaken baseball. All right, so with all that being said, you want Juan Soto?
Yeah, but as I said to you, and I really believe this.
All right, what are you willing to give up?
I'd be willing to give up.
You get 2.5 years. That's it. You are guaranteed 2.5 years. You don't.
I'm not doing that. Nope,
nothing
doing
else
that.
Is guaranteed.
I'm not doing that.
For 3 playoff / World Series runs in a row with Julio and Soto together, you're not going to do. What if I can tell you, you don't have to give up anyone from your major league roster. You may have to give up a ton of prospects.
Mm-hmm.
Like say goodbye to Kelnick, Marte, Harry Ford, Emerson Hancock, and one more. Like you're giving up the farm, but you don't have to touch your major league. Oh, by the way, we forgot Brash on the ridiculous slider list. His might be number one. You don't have to touch your major league roster. You get 3 shots at a World Series. You're still saying no?
Gosh, I would
still resign him. It's just not in the bag.
Yeah. I don't know if I would want that. I wouldn't. The way this is going and whom your core is and I would want a commitment from him. I would want him to have skin in the game too. If I am going to be totally skinned, like I was off my mountain bike, which I still am, by the way, on my hands and my knees and everything else. If I am putting that kind of skin and I'm skinning my farm system, I would love to see a player reciprocate and go, okay, I get it. I'm not signing a 15-year nor a 10-year. I'm not doing anything like that.
And maybe he will. I don't know.
But
you can't be guaranteed it.
But to me, that resonates. That speaks a language. That speaks to the culture. That speaks to everything.
And maybe you're
going to
get it done down the road, Brock. But look, if this offseason taught us anything, it's that the Mariners can't just spend money and have people and great players decide they want to show up here. So I don't know that there's any chance, especially with Scott Boras, put it all together. Yep. I don't see how that happens.
Yep.
So you've got to be clear with understanding you don't get that that promise. The irony of it is, if you were to make that deal and trade a whole bunch of prospects and bring back a guy like Juan Soto, it might allow you to sign other guys also. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? That shows like the commitment.
Just the talent pump. Yes. Like, yep, okay, these
not
guys
just,
are.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like proving to the league that you're in. Right?
Yeah.
We're in. And so other people will say, all right, that's a place I'm willing to sign. Not mm-hmm. just New York and L.A. Okay, that's a team that's serious with Julio and Soto and a couple of other really good young players, some pitchers. Okay, I'm willing to take a chance on that. Mm-hmm. They've shown they're invested in winning because baseball players, more than anyone else, don't trust prospects.
Yep.
They Correct. Don't care about prospects Correct. At all. You can ask Mitch Haniger heading into this season, hey, what about all the farm system? I don't care about that.
Exactly.
That don't help me.
Nope.
But if you go trade those prospects for Juan Soto, they know who Juan Soto is.
Mm-hmm.
They understand Soto and Julio.
Yep.
That, to me, is an interesting part of the conversation.
It is. Yeah, it is. And as you present that, I kind of weaken and soften and say, yeah, what do I care about prospects? Give me wins. Give me three playoff runs. Give me, you know, that kind of fervor.
Because you can't get mad ever about watching one of the best in the game. You just can't in any game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, like, if arguably the best player in the game is coming to your town to play for your team, it doesn't matter what you're giving up. You can't be upset.
Yep.
You just can't. Like, that's just it. And the kid's 23. He's entering his prime. Like, it's just, yeah. So, I don't know. We'll see what direction
and
goes.
Then you pair him with the other kid.
Right.
That is your 21st century kid.
Right.
You had the 20th century kid. Now you have the 21st century kid, and you're pairing Ken Griffey Jr. with, I mean, who was that guy in the 90s and early 2000s in baseball? Right? Who
Barry
was
Bonds?
Yeah. So you want Barry Bonds and Ken Griffey Jr.?
Right.
Would that have changed the dynamic? Would Ken have stayed? Could they have won World Series?
Frank
could they
Thomas,
have done all of that?
Right. I mean, like, there's a few other guys around that time that you could point at and say, okay, what if you put those two together during that time?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's pretty intoxicating. Not going to lie. There's a lot to really like there. That is some real elite talent. All right. Speaking of elite, Brock, how about New Heights for brunch in the Seattle area?
Okay.
You like? I know you're a brunch guy.
Big brunch guy.
Sen
Grim
Prime.
Peg, big brunch maker.
You want to hear some brunch stuff here from Sen Prime Steak and Sushi, downtown Bellevue? They're offering an innovative weekend brunch service every Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 2. You're invited to brunch with an unbelievable view on the 31st floor, Lincoln Square South. All right, here are some of the food options.
Let's go.
So the way they do this, it's like supposed to be a sharing thing. Okay? So you share plates. The menu is put into like three different tiers. Here's a few of the items. Steak and egg fried rice. That's an interesting combo.
Interesting.
Chicharrón chicken and waffle.
Okay.
That's become a thing. Love chicken and waffles. Fruitopia pancakes. What's your favorite fruit to put in a pancake?
Yeah, just probably blueberry.
Blueberry.
Okay. Yeah, keep it simple.
Have you done coconut?
Nah, not the biggest coconut fan.
All right. Coconut's pretty good. How about lard on hash and eggs? I love hash. Anything hash is good for me. Dungeness crab avocado crostino benedict. How about that?
I'd like to lay my head on that.
Dungeness crab and avocado crostino benedict.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lunch focus plates as well because it's brunch, right? Spicy tuna prosciutto pizza. Yeah. The Robata skewer and congee. I love congee. One of my favorites. Tempura lobster roll sandwich. Dude, it's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Creative libations as well. Put it all alongside your new favorite brunch dish. Does that sound good to you?
Sign me up.
Well, go look at the full menu. Book your table. Go to ascendprime.com. Well, Brock, here we are. We're like within 2 weeks it's like a week and a half, basically, before the Seahawks start training camp. Which
I think it's 9 days. I think
is
it's
it like really that quickly?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, I think it's a week from tomorrow. Actually, I think it's 8 days.
Gosh, it really does not feel that way as just for whatever reason.
The Mariners, that's why it doesn't feel that way.
Because
usually the Mariners hit a June swoon in July, and oh my gosh, okay. Yeah, Mariners shut it down. Remember all of that narrative for year after year after year? Yeah, they build you up in April and May.
It wasn't the case last year, though. I mean, like, they had a great great second half and all that. I don't know. Just kind of a, and the fact that Russ isn't here and they didn't go out and get sort of a big name, I'm sure that's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a fascinating football team, and we're going to learn so much about the future direction of what they're going to do.
Yep.
That, you know, I can't wait. I mean, like, it's going to be a fantastic training camp experience to figure out who this team and what they're all about.
Yeah, I did a little exercise.
Yeah.
And I told you about this, and we teased it on your morning show, that the five most important, you could frame it any way you want, most important for 2022, most important, to me, this was most important for the franchise. This wasn't just a 2022 conversation. This is the five, and I ended up with six. I couldn't do five. I tried to cut it down. I actually had like 11, but I cut 11 down to six.
So you made a top five list that has six people on it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, there's a bonus. It's a bonus, baby.
Okay.
There's one more. So yeah, top five plus one heading into this season for the most important. And it was a fun exercise. And as I started to look at the roster, I'm like, oh, that's right. He's on the roster. Oh, that's right. They got Shelby Harris. He's a really good player. Oh, Noah Fant.
So this isn't most intriguing, which we used to do.
No, nope, nope.
This is not just, who intrigues you.
Nope.
This is most important to what? To their success this year?
This is
to their
most
long-term
important
development?
To Pete and John and the Seahawks to build the foundation of your next great team.
All right.
This is the 2011 Seahawks.
All right.
Like, you go into 2011, like who needs to, who's most important? Gosh, I'd really love for KJ and Sherm and Cam Chancellor and these guys to be legit dudes. Russell Okung, because if they're Earl, if they're legit dudes, this is going to be a Super Bowl winning team.
Dude, we were talking about Earl today. We were ranking crowns at the end of the show. Do you remember when Earl wore a cape and a crown to his wedding?
Yeah, King Earl.
Like
felt shoes, the robe, the crown.
Oh my God.
Bizarre.
Very bizarre. All right, Brock, give me your list. Top six, apparently, important Seahawks.
Number six.
Okay.
Ken Walker III.
Of course, that's your guy.
Kenneth. I still like to call him Kenneth, but I think he's going to go by Ken Walker III. I looked it up. He was second round pick, obviously. We know that. He was pick 41. Do you know where Jonathan Taylor was picked by the Indianapolis Colts in 2020?
41.
Do you know where Derrick Henry was picked in 2016 by the Tennessee Titans?
40.
45. 41, 41, 45. Yeah. Jonathan Taylor came out the gate, 1,100 yards, 1,800 last year, absolute monster. Henry was a little slower, 440, 744, split some carries and everything else. I think had some injuries. Number six on my list is Ken Walker. If Ken Walker is Jonathan Taylor, if he's Derrick Henry, if he's a second round pick, and that's pretty high real estate for a running back, especially when you had Rashad Penny, especially as we sit here today. There's Chris Carson on the roster. I don't know if that's going to be the same 10 days from now, but number six, if you're right on Ken Walker and you've got an absolute stud 1,000-yard rusher in this program, it changes the foundation and it builds the foundation and it changes the trajectory to have that kind of stud at that position.
Yeah, it allows Pete to do everything else he wants to do. Right.
It allows you to be physical, allows you to be explosive, it allows you to take the burden off your QB a little bit. It allows you to grow your team. It allows you to eat the clock and minimize possessions. It allows you to play exactly to the style that philosophically Pete still believes in and will as long as he coaches the sport.
Yeah, that one makes sense. Okay. I could see him in the top six.
Number five. Jordan Brooks. Sliding over to the middle. Still just 24 years old. He'll turn 25 in October. 184 combined tackles last year, 80-some solo, another 90 assisted tackles. Just one sack, though. Just one forced fumble. He's going to slide over, and he's going to fill some very large Hall of Fame gold shoes. And I think he's going to play his more natural position. I think he's more of a Mike linebacker anyway. And if Jordan Brooks is the captain right in the middle of your defense with his speed, he was able to play all 17 games a year ago, beat up a little bit as a rookie. Number five, most important, if you find your cornerstone middle linebacker replacing the guy that did it for a decade at one of the highest levels we've seen in the NFL, that would be enormous for
this season. Interesting. I would probably put him on the list, but maybe for some different reasons. He's such an intriguing character for me because of replacing Bobby, but also because can he grow up? Right? Can he not get fooled? Can he be? I know he's got all the physical gifts to play the position, the speed, the explosiveness, mm-hmm. etc. Can he not get fooled? Can he be the smart veteran out there now into his third year? Can he grow up? And
you know, the system will require him to do more of that.
Well, and especially without Bobby pointing and putting everyone in the right spot, a guy who knew the defense down cold. Can he be that guy and be the aid that everyone else in the defense needs from a position that, as you said, has sort of a captaincy element to it?
I mean, you've seen it in Tampa. Those two young linebackers, or one young one and an older one, Lavonte David, those two, and what they have meant to that defense and in this league and in this division and against an Arizona and against a San Francisco and against a Cooper Kupp and the Rams, and none of those guys going anywhere in the short term. You better have somebody, A, that can run sideline to sideline. He can do that. B, who can finish. He can do that. But C, to your point, in a new system, it's much more complicated coverage-wise, going to demand more of him to be the voice right in the middle. There's no more Bobby. That number 54 and those 255 pounds and those broad shoulders, they are in L.A. You're actually going to be playing against him a couple times this year. I think a very, very, very large void that he's got to fill, and therefore number five on my
again,
most important
also
list.
A first round pick. I mean, like, correct, you know, and one that at the time there were some questions about. I think you and I maybe liked it more than other people did. I know I did. I was kind of excited about what it looked like and how they were designing it to eventually fill Bobby's shoes.
Yep.
And now it's go time.
Well, now you're filling.
You get to find out whether or not it worked.
Number four on my list, most important Seahawks into the 2022 season, is Daryl Taylor. Showed flashes of being the most dominant defensive player on the field last year. Six and a half sacks. Had some of the most violent collisions. I don't know if you – did you see that tweet a couple days ago from the Seahawks? It was kind of their top hits of the season. And there were four or five of them. And, man, there were some just jaw-breaking, jaw-pad-exploding collisions. And Daryl Taylor was a part of a couple of those. And there were times that he couldn't be blocked. And in this league, again, this probably comes down in some of this to positions. You need him. And yeah, you bring in Nwosu from the Chargers, and he's going to get you, I think, six or seven or eight sacks. He's a good player, Uchenna Nwosu. But you need your next Frank Clark. You need your next Cliff Avril. You need your next guy to hang your hat and say, yes, you will not be solo blocked. You will take over games, and you will be the next freak pass rusher that all of these teams look for, that you find in this division. You're the Bosa, you're the Chandler Jones, you're the on and on and on around the league. You've got to be that guy. And if he can be that guy, that is a huge, huge bonus for years to come.
Yeah, it's funny, as I think about this list, and obviously you've done sort of the homework on it, I'm kind of in the reaction mode. I think that he'd be number two on my list.
Okay.
I think if Daryl Taylor develops, you need him to. He is the pass rush right now, right? And Boye Mafe may turn into it eventually, but can't put a rookie there right now.
No, but he has nowhere near the instincts right now.
Right,
to do that.
Right. Yep. So I'm not trying to oversell him.
Mm-hmm.
He's your pass rush, and you can't exist in the NFL.
There's not a Benson Mayoa. There's not a Carlos Dunlap right now.
Not right now.
And we'll see in training camp. I think, you know, Dunlap's still out there, I believe. So, I mean, there's still an opportunity maybe to add a veteran piece. They seemingly do that kind of every year around training camp and kind of, you know, kick some stones and see what else is out there. But as far as a 6'4", 267-pound unique difference maker that last year flashed, last year showed things that LJ Collier and Rasheem Green and the rest of your draft picks over the last few years have not. He showed you, like, whoa, he's got when healthy, and he went healthy as a rookie. And he's not a young guy. He is 25, 5 years of college, injuries, everything else. Like, you've got a 5-year window here where if you're right with him, you've got a difference maker that this league has to have.
Okay.
Okay.
He's That's number four. I think I'd have number two, but okay.
Number three, Charles Cross. You had it with Walter Jones for a decade. You had it with Russell Okung for, I don't know, 6 years. You've had it, you know, the last few years with Dwayne Brown in his mid to late 30s. When you've had him, you've seen the difference. When you've not had a left tackle, it's a nightmare. It's a nightmare. And if Charles Cross, who's only 21, who comes out of an air raid system, is going to be climbing a steep learning curve and doing it against some of the most difficult and demanding pass rushers in your own division and defensive lines in your own division, if you're right with Charles Cross, you're right for the next 10 years, and you solidify one of the most important positions on your football
team. It's so funny. He'd be in my top five or six. I don't think I'd have him ahead of Daryl Taylor, but it's interesting. They've had solid play at left tackle for years. I mean, for the last decade of Russ's, they've always had solid play at left tackle. First Russell Okung, then Dwayne Brown.
Well, there was a couple years of bad wet towel and
right, a year or so. Revolving door. It was like a year and a half, 2 years max?
2 years.
Okay, yep. 2 years. But in 8 of the 10 years Russ was here.
That's right.
They had good play at left tackle.
Absolutely.
Right tackle was mostly a disaster, right? Yep. Issues at times up front in the middle. Yep. So I don't disagree with you. Obviously, they drafted this kid up. He's the highest draft pick they've made in forever, and he's unbelievably talented, and it would solidify that position. But if the rest of the offensive line stinks, I don't care how good he is. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, but you took him in a position of real estate as an asset. You didn't trade down.
Right.
You didn't. You put your. He was one of the five or six guys, and I know they're listed, and didn't run real deep after him. Like, if he wouldn't have been there, I don't know what they would have done because they valued him as that kind of piece of real estate. Park Avenue, top 10, athleticism, check every box. What we want, the way we want to go about it, a work ethic that we want. And if you're right. Now, you've also had for a decade, you can the chicken and egg a little bit. Like, Russ has had a great left tackle. Well, Russ has also at times, especially early in his career, made people better and escaped how many sacks? I mean, took a bunch, but escaped and was able to run away from how many? You don't have that anymore. You don't have that escapability. You don't have that at that position. So it, I think, puts a premium on that guy being a difference maker. And if you're right on Charles Cross, you're right for the next decade. That sure answers a big, big question, a big important piece of real estate on your football team.
All right, that's number three.
Number two, DK Metcalf.
Yeah.
24. He's 24. He's younger than Daryl Taylor.
Crazy.
He's 24 years old. In 3 years, he's stayed healthy, which was a huge fear of you and me when they took him in the draft. 58, 83, and 75 receptions, 900, 1,300, and 900 yards, 7, 10, and 12 touchdowns, 29 touchdowns in 3 years. They're going to have to make a decision within the next week or so, and I think, or next 2 weeks into training camp, of whether or not they pay him the going rate for people of his star power. For the 30-some minutes, we talked about Julio Rodriguez and what it means to have a young phenom and a young star and a young difference maker. You know, there is no Russell. There is no Bobby. For a team that needs that next absolute stud, that charismatic, Seahawks are relevant, Seahawks matter, must-see TV, what is DK going to do next? And be able to elevate the QB position, I think this is, for the 2022 season, incredibly important that if and when DK gets signed, he lives up to that contract. And oh, by the way, it's going to get harder. You don't have Russell Wilson. You don't have a franchise quarterback. And we need to see a maturity out of DK Metcalf. We need to see him grow in his voice. Mm-hmm. We need to see him continue to learn from a Tyler Lockett, who is going to be that voice, who is the established grizzled pro. Everything we talked about, with the Mariners and these veteran guys looking at a freak show come in like Julio and respect him. Tyler's watched DK come in, and DK can do things that Tyler can't, but Tyler is still an incredible pro, an incredible receiver. But he's going to hand the reins over, and this new contract's going to demand that DK lives up to that and has, I think, a maturity. There's still some maturity there that we need to see from DK, who can lose his mind and out on the field and on the sidelines. So I think this year, incredibly, incredibly important for DK Metcalf.
Do you? I don't know whether you put any stock into Madden ratings. I don't necessarily. It's not something that's part of my life. I'm just not a video game person.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting to me that DK was not in the top 10.
Well, he was 10 on the NFL list, right?
Yep.
The list that we talked about.
He was
about
13 the last couple on weeks. Their list. Do you want to hear who's ahead of him?
Sure.
So I'm curious where you would kind of fall on some of these guys. Number one, Davante Adams. Okay. Number two, DeAndre Hopkins. They have him right behind him.
Sheesh.
Number three, Tyreek Hill.
Okay.
Number four, Stephon Diggs. Five, Cooper Kupp. Six, Keenan Allen. He's so good. Seven, Amari Cooper. Eight, Michael Thomas. Now, he hasn't played in a while, but just the ability.
Mm-hmm.
Nine, Mike Evans. 10, Justin Jefferson.
Mm.
11, Terry McLaurin. And then you know who number 12 is? Between DK and McLaurin, Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
They have Lockett actually just ahead of him. And then after DK is Adam Thielen, Chris Godwin, Debo Samuel, A.J. Brown, Brennan Cooks, Calvin Ridley, et cetera.
Well, he is much more dynamic than Keenan Allen. I think at this stage of the game, Nuke Hopkins is an enormous question mark.
Sure.
Obviously suspended and performance-enhancing drugs and everything else. Amari Cooper's a guy that, to me, is, I think, past his prime physically. He's gotten a little bit beat up in this league. So, I mean, there's no question he can be. Justin Jefferson, I don't think physically is what Julio is or what DK is. Yeah, confuse those two for a reason.
Now, is that because you confuse him with Julio Rodriguez or Julio Jones?
Yeah, more Julio Jones.
Oh, I thought it was Julio Rodriguez because he was on your brain.
Nope.
It was interesting.
It was actually, I was waiting for you to say Julio Jones because for year after year after year after year after year and all those batting ratings, where's Julio Jones been? He's been in the top 10, top five, if not number one, I think, for some of those years. And that has always been the comp for DK, but it's continuing to refine his game. It's continuing to refine the route runner. It's continuing to have a maturity to stay in that neutral, you know, leadership position a little bit more. And yeah, maybe those Madden ratings can be a little bit of fuel, but yeah,
right, so he's number two.
He's way off the charts. Yep.
So I assume we have the same number one if that's the case. Jamal
Drew Lock.
Adams.
Drew Lock.
Stop it. That's not your number one.
That's my number one.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
You want me to send my notepad with a little piece of paper right here?
You're going to have to text me a picture of that. I don't believe you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do that. I will do that.
That's
when
not true.
When we're done, Doc. It's absolutely true.
So Adams isn't in your top six? This list is a sham.
No.
This list is a total crock.
I don't even know how Jamal Adams is going to fit in this system. I don't know if he's going to be able to.
This is a total crock.
I don't even know if he's going to be able to cover. I don't know.
What are you talking about?
Jamal Adams is not going to be a part of your future for the next 5 years. He's just not.
Neither is Drew Lock.
How do you know that?
Come on.
And most importantly, if he can play, that changes all of this conversation. If Drew Lock is actually good, if Drew Lock can actually play, it changes the whole foundation and trajectory of the Seahawks. If Drew Lock can do what Tannehill did leaving Miami and going to Tennessee, if Drew Brees leaving San Diego and going to New Orleans, you know, we've seen some of these guys get fresh starts and start in new places and be difference makers. If Drew Lock can be a difference maker, Mike, it changes the whole trajectory of John and Pete.
I think Ryan Tannehill's the best comp you've got. That's the hope. The hope is that Drew Lock can be Ryan Tannehill. I don't know if that's anything to write home about. Ryan Tannehill, as far as I'm concerned, personally lost his team their first big playoff game this year. So I don't know if that's like a lofty goal, but that's the hope. Is at best that he is
correct.
That's who he is.
Yes.
Man.
Do I believe he can do that? No. Do I have a ton of confidence? No. But if I'm putting together the most important, okay, and John Schneider said, you know, different deals are out there and different opportunities, and who do we want? And who are we looking for?
Nope.
And I'm not going to draft a QB, and I'm not going to take on Baker, and I'm not going to do this. He's doing that for a reason, because he wants to see what this kid can do. He drafted Russell for a reason. He loved Patrick Mahomes for a reason. He loved Josh Allen for a reason, right? When John Schneider has had an eye on people,
But I don't know that he had this eye the same way. Maybe he did, but, you know, this may be more in the Charlie Whitehurst, Tavares Jackson vein.
I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, but it depends on, could they have made a Russell trade anywhere else, or was Russell saying, hey, Denver or nowhere?
Correct.
And if that's the case, it's not that they wanted Drew Lock. It's that he's the quarterback that came back.
Mm-hmm.
If they had made this deal with Philadelphia and they ended up with Jalen Hurts, you know, I mean, like, I don't know that it's as simple as that. And I don't say that as a shot at Drew Lock. And again, I will find a way to get myself excited about him. And I'm not going to sit here and, like, you know, eat my own shoe if he doesn't work out. Or if he does, I won't be embarrassed. I'll be excited. That will be awesome. Kudos to him. He seems like a great kid. Great dude. I don't believe he's the most important Seahawk this year, because I don't believe in my heart
that's
the direction they're going to go.
Yeah, you don't believe that he can play. And that's kind of the script that's been written. Certainly was in Denver. And although there are some media folks here, and it will be very fascinating.
Brock, they traded two first-round picks and gave a boatload of money to Jamal Adams. He needs to be on your top six list. I have him as number one.
Okay. I think Jamal Adams is an okay player. I think he's okay. I think he's severely beaten up. I think his body has been through, I mean, we watched, unfortunately, with Cam Chancellor, right, who threw his body into how many collisions, and Cam was bigger, broader, thicker, stronger, right? And we watched, unfortunately, just, yeah, that, you know, it's the same thing with running backs. It's just you don't endure, you don't last. This guy's had multiple shoulder surgeries, you know, multiple injuries throughout. I don't think he covers well. I don't know how he's going to handle this kind of system. Would it shock me by the end of the year if Marquise Blair is playing and Jamal Adams is kind of a, I don't know, not a role player, but a rusher, and you fit him and play to some of his strengths? Like, I am very low, obviously, on Jamal Adams, because I don't think you made that investment. That's sunk cost. That's done. It's over. You're not getting any of that back, you know, and he's played a couple years for you. And I don't know. I just, there's not, to me, I don't see him here for the next 5 years. If you can get something out of him for the next couple years, great. But I don't see him being a cornerstone piece for the next 5 years for the Seahawks. You do?
It doesn't, I don't know whether I do or not.
I see Quandre Diggs longer than I see Jamal Adams. I see Diggs.
I put him in the same category as Jordan Brooks, only with more invested in him, quite frankly. Like, I put him in the same category. He's a guy that I don't, you know, I want to see it. He's got an incredible amount of ability. How does it work out in the system? Can you figure out how to take advantage of his athleticism? But he's Jordan Brooks, only with multiple first round picks invested in him and all the money. So I love that you got, I don't disagree with anyone on your list other than Drew Lock, but I have to put Jamal Adams on this list. He's the biggest move they've made.
Yep. It's pretty crazy. He'll only be 27 in October. Yeah. He's 26 right now.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, his body feels like 30. Unfortunately, he feels like some of these NFL running backs that have just taken such a beating. And he's thrown his body into the line of scrimmage how many times, into how many collisions for how many years in New York, and then the last couple here. And it's just, and you know, the hardest part for me, Mike, is just his coverage. I just don't think he can cover.
Yeah.
And that is to play that position and to play in this league.
Well, finding that out will be just as important, even if it means that he's not that guy. As I've said before, I'm so wired to love Jamal Adams.
Yep.
I just need him to let me do it. Please let me love you, because I'm so wired to do so. Who, before we move on here, who else could have been, like, who were your just misses?
Yep. Kobe Bryant. Because if you're right at corner in this system, in, you know, just a guy, and it's going to be a little different system than what we have seen in the past. But a Kobe Bryant in this rookie class is more incredibly intriguing. Noah Fant is incredibly intriguing. They picked up his fifth year option. He was a first round pick. We know the difference that elite tight ends can make. Travis Kelce and George Kittle and the elite tight ends, and just physically, you saw him in person. He's Jimmy Graham light physically.
Yeah.
I mean, he can really run, and he's not, I hope, going to be asked to bury people in the run game and be a great run blocker, because that's not what he is. That's what Will Dissly is.
Spent so much money on Will Dissly.
That's right. That's what Will Dissly is. So hopefully Will stays healthy and Noah doesn't have to do what is not his strength, which is run blocking. And he can actually get out and he can catch and he can use that frame and he can use that body and he can be a difference maker for you. So I think there's a compelling argument to be made for a Noah Fant is a young guy playing that position in this league, in this system.
Yeah.
Whew. If he's good, that would be enormous.
D. Eskridge on your list?
Nope.
Okay.
I just don't believe it. Trey Brown, I don't know if size-wise if I fully believe it.
One thing that's interesting to me, and it's a funny thing, because this team re-signed both guys at the that whole defensive tackle spot seems to be a little bit up in the air still for me. And they've re-signed Puna. Al Wood's going to be back, right? They brought in the guy from Denver.
Shelby Harris, yeah.
I'm curious to see what that looks like. I don't know that I'd put anybody on that list either. But it's
those
such
are just those feel like just four pros.
Yeah.
They don't feel there's no Aaron Donald, there's no Fletcher Cox, there's no, you know, but you're
but
asking
there's no
those
link.
No, you're asking those four walruses to flop around there and eat up, you know, the interior, which they will.
Yeah.
I mean, I think those guys
But if
will
that's
be good
the
players.
Case, then your linebackers Cody Barton better be up to snuff, right? Yep. You better get what you said out of Jordan Brooks.
Yep.
And then Daryl Taylor. So
yes.
Good stuff. Fun list.
It is a fun list. I knew you would hate the Drew Lock, but if they are right.
I honestly thought you were joking.
No,
Nope. I legitimately, and I'm not making this up for a bit, I thought you were just messing with me.
Right.
Because I just couldn't imagine that was the case.
No, and I don't think most people are imagining right now he's even the quarterback, because it's been a lot of Geno and everything else. But I just don't think he's a bum. I don't. I think he is a 6'3", 6'4", good athlete, smooth arm. This will come down to, and what broke him, unfortunately, in Denver were expectations off the charts, through the roof, playing in the shadow of Peyton and playing in the shadow of John Elway, playing in the most difficult NFL QB market there is. And Russell is going to feel it. And we're going to watch Russell. And this can be fascinating to see him handle what unfortunately Drew could not. And offensively, they weren't good enough. And in big moments, he wasn't good enough and he wasn't accurate enough. But I think there's enough clay there to mold. I think Schneider does like him. I think Pete could grow into trusting him a little bit more, but I think John likes him. And there's enough there that he is just not a total bum that we have seen around the league get opportunities. And as I said, if he's right and he can play and he can make things happen, and in big moments, he actually delivers and builds some confidence, can he become Tannehill? And what would that mean to this program moving forward? I think it'd be pretty darn significant.
Hey, so I know you missed a podcast. We got some people who are super mad at us when we miss a podcast now and again. Like, yeah. I get it. Like, I had COVID. You traveled. Like, you know, I'm sorry. Sheesh. But you missed.
They want, Mike, they want 4 hours every day of you and I. So, You know, they get an hour and a half, you know, or and then what do I do? 15 minutes for so an hour. Yeah, 2.5 for a week is not enough. They want more.
People want more of you?
They want more. They want more of you and me.
Anytime you're ready, come join. I mean, have I ever said that I didn't want you back? We'd make it sound like I don't want you around. Anyway, you missed because you were in Guatemala.
Yes.
And I did kind of want to hear a little bit about it. This is part of the compassion, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is the first trip with compassion in 3 years. So because of COVID, and I know you're talking to start the show, some cancellations and things still, it's still around. It's still been 2.5 years and it's still present and in our country, but you get outside of our country and you get into third world countries and it is still like, well, we went in June a couple weeks ago, Mike, and it felt like a year and a half ago in America, like still masked up and still just, you know, things shut down. It's still, you know, Compassion is now with their projects are starting to get some of their 2.2 million kids back into, you know, their programs. It's really been life-saving. So much of the resource has gone to simply bringing food and medicine to the people. The many of the projects have been shut down for 2+ years. Now starting to open up a little bit. So this was the first trip in 3 years. We were there in 2019. It was kind of the start of the fill the stadium. We didn't know it then. We didn't know the world was going to be turned upside down and shut down and a pandemic and this virus were going to come. But some of the seeds of that fill the stadium campaign where we raised, you know, $36 million and 76,000 sponsorships, 76,000 kids around the globe, ended up being sponsored during the pandemic because of those resources that were raised. So yeah, this was the first trip, man. And it was so cool. It was so rewarding. It was so, I think I told you this, life-giving, right? That we have so much here. And I think so often we get so spoiled with what we have that we forget to live. And you get into those environments, and I know you've traveled the globe and seen different places as well, and you see people with so little yet so alive and so full of life. And I'll quickly tell you just one little story. Vilma, I think it's Wilma in English, but Vilma is in Spanish. I saw her 3 years ago. We went to the same place, this village in Guatemala, about an hour and a half north of Antigua. And I got to see her. She was 8 years old at that point. We went to her home and she just had the most magical, beautiful eyes and warm spirit. Fast forward 3 years, we go to the same place and this little girl runs up to me. I'm like, oh my gosh, I think that's her. I didn't remember her name, but I remember that smile and those eyes. And then she starts speaking Spanish to me very quickly. And I was like, oh, Juan, come here. Juan was our translator. And I said, is she saying what I think she's saying? Is she saying, do you remember me from 3 years ago? And so then he speaks Spanish to her and she just beams, man.
Oh, that's cool.
Like Julio, she just smiled and she's like, you remember me? And I'm like, yeah, Yeah, I remembered you. You know, and compassion, you know, so much of what we do is to make sure those children are loved, they're known, they're protected. And in that moment, she felt known. Like, you remembered me from 3 years ago, and you're darn right I remembered you. So pretty special stuff, man. Pretty neat to get back on the road with them, and hopefully we'll get to do more and more of that in the years to come.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad to see you remember people, you know, with all the hits to the head and everything
right,
else, right?
True.
I mean, like, it's a legitimate fear, I'm sure, as you're getting older. What do you remember? Who do you remember, et cetera?
Oh, so. Is this self-fulfilling right now? Are you projecting right now?
Maybe just a little bit.
Is that what you're doing?
Maybe just a little. I don't know, man. I'm definitely feeling like I'm getting older. I was, you know what I've tried to start doing is I'm trying to eat less red meat.
Mm.
I don't know whether that matters at all. I mean, it's not stopping me from eating more carbs, but which I also need to stop doing. I know. I Big Mike and everything else. But last night I grilled up a couple of Beyond Burgers.
Yes.
Where do you stand on the fake meat?
You know, what's fascinating is two nights ago I did the same thing. Costco sells the Impossible Burgers.
Okay.
That, like, I think it's the same one you get at Burger King. So yeah, Beyond or Impossible or whatever you want to call it.
Well, they're two
it.
Different brands, I think. I don't know that I don't remember which one I got. I think it was Beyond.
Okay.
But it was really good.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
I was saying to Justin today that I don't know if I would say it's like Heather said, oh, is it better than a hamburger? No. Let's not get carried away. Is it
especially
as good?
Especially not a good hamburger, medium
rare. Right, exactly. Let's like an Ascend hamburger. Come on. I don't know whether it was even. It wasn't even. Was it 90% of like a, you know, decent hamburger? Yeah, I think it might have been. It was pretty good. I put a little cheese on it, tomato, onion, some condiments, bun. Like, it was pretty good.
Yes. Yeah, you do it up with everything else, I would say it can get to 90%.
Yeah, that's about right. Somewhere in the 90% range.
Yes.
And then I'll tell you, the kids like the corn nuggets one, QORN, which are like chicken. Have you had that? Dude.
We tried that in a pot pie.
I'm telling you, the corn chicken nuggets taste like McDonald's chicken nuggets. They're delicious. I don't know if they're any healthier. They're still fried in oil and everything else. But I feel better about myself when I eat them.
Good.
And then they take the effect the next day, which is a whole different thing.
Gassy?
Yeah, more gassy. So than with meat, I find. Yeah.
I think a lot of those come from a bean product.
Right.
If I know my food at all, which I kind of do decently. And for me, beans are real. Like, beans are like,
right. The magical fruit.
Yeah, they do. Okay. So, yep, okay, good.
Well, that's going to pretty much do it for us today.
That's it?
Yeah, that's all I got today.
Okay.
It was a lot of Mariner stuff. I mean, like...
Did you see I texted you the picture of
I did.
My
I still don't
pad.
Believe you. I'm looking at it. I feel like you edited it in some way.
What are you talking about? That is in pen. There is nothing edited as I was talking. I was circled Drew Locke and everything else. I'm also going to send you a picture because one of the guys on the trip... also was there 3 years ago. So I'm going to send you two pictures I have with one from 3 years ago with Vilma and one from this last
trip. Are you
trip.
In both pictures?
I am. I'm hugging her in both pictures.
Oh, so we can see whether Brock's gained or lost any weight in that time. Now, you don't have the scars from your flip over the handlebars at that point.
No,
right?
No. This was early. This was a couple weeks ago.
So when you say Brock told the story the other day of
mountain
biking with
Have
with
you
Molly.
Ever mountain biked, by the way?
Heck no. Not really. No, that's not something that interests me.
Okay.
But so you're coming down the mountain, easy trail.
Yes.
And you flip over the handlebars. Now, when you say you,
I didn't flip. I.
That's
flew.
What I mean. What do you mean? You flew.
Flew.
You flipped.
Like
what
Superman.
Does that mean?
I flew like Superman.
So face first. You
face
didn't go.
No.
You know, it wasn't
nope, did
feet
not,
flying
no.
over.
No.
That
no.
would have been really bad.
That'd have been real bad.
Okay.
I probably would have broke something. No, I wasn't going fast enough. I did see some Ewoks that flew by me on their mountain bikes. Like, oh my gosh.
When you say that, is that because they're short or because of how fast they were going?
Because how fast they were going.
All right.
Just,
hey.
Yeah, no, they were speeding. These young kids just, are you kidding me? How do you do that? I mean, honestly, going downhill, rocks, trees, vines, all this stuff, just flying downhill at least 20, 25 miles an hour. I'm going like 7 and braking like, you know, Molly's behind me. So we're just trying not to fall. Don't fall. Don't drop it. Don't fall. And it was about 6 miles down and we were about 5 miles done and I felt pretty good. So I started to pick up my pace, but yeah, I took my eyes off the road. And that's the one thing I realized that I don't think I could ever get into this because you just can't take in the beauty you're so focused on life and staying on the bike. Yes. So I just peeked over at this beautiful creek for a moment. And then by the time I turned around, it's like, uh-oh, I'm over. Like I just hit something and I flew like Superman right over the bars.
All right.
And thankfully, just didn't hurt myself worse than bumps and bruises.
Which is sort of shocking, given your history.
Correct. No question.
All right, buddy. Good stuff. Next week, we'll be just about ready for training camp, which will be awesome. We'll see where the Mariners are at that point. Another
sold out?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sold out?
Another week closer to the trade deadline. So have a great week in the hay.
He's in the barn.
See everybody.